Hi, it's Michael Senoff with Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. Welcome to this August 7th HMA question and answer session with Richard Johnson. You, the consultant, submitted your questions for Richard Johnson to be answered. I've got them all right here for you in this 65-minute interview. Now, let's get going. I want to welcome all the HMA consultants to this special training call with Richard Johnson. And I've had all the consultants submit their most pressing question about anything they want to know on how to grow their HMA consulting practice. So without further ado, Richard, I want to welcome you.
Thank you, Michael.
I appreciate you taking the time. We got a lot of questions to cover, and hopefully we're going to be delivering the answers that our consultants want to know. And I think we'll be doing that because the questions are straight from them. So let's start off with our first question from Michael Kerstetter, and he asked, Richard, I'm starting my consulting business while being employed full-time at 50-plus hours per week. My hours are somewhat flexible, but it would be hard to take calls or leave on a minute's notice. If you were in my shoes, how would you use the HMA system to establish a consulting practice and best leverage the time that is available?
Michael, I think your best start would be to try to do something with the company you're employed with. In other words, if you're spending 50 hours with a business, try to find some areas where your HMA can build that business, and maybe approach your employer, and maybe you do it as part of a bonus. Maybe you do it for practice, but if you're already booked 50 hours, I'd just start there. And then the next thing would be, there's a lot of businesses that would be happy to have you come in on a Saturday. There's a lot of businesses that would be happy to come in at evening time. So it'd just be a matter of finding those kinds of businesses. Probably some friends or associates that might operate in the evening or Saturday would be the next step.
Okay, great. This question is from Richard Bernstein, and he says, Richard, I have a great opportunity to present to a medical membership organization. I know what to offer the specialist, but there is little for the general practitioners other than community marketing. Any suggestions on what to propose beyond community? These MDs are part of a physician's committee involving hundreds of doctors. There are 137 on the committee.
Part of and kind of associated with community marketing for the general practitioners is education marketing. I would focus on creating a series of free reports. You know, with this healthcare debate going on, these general practitioners could have a real opportunity to solidify their practice, to solidify their expertise, to take a stance on some of the issues that are being debated. And those are great free reports. And I'd create a series of free reports that this group or this association might do together as your marketing in the community, but now do it on the web and letting them download these free reports and get their websites up and going where they have access to these free reports. So I would focus on education. I would make education the marketing priority.
Now, Richard, I had talked to Richard, and he had mentioned that he had the opportunity to go in front of this committee and to do an actual workshop. And he was under the impression that these physicians, that a workshop may not benefit them in building their practices. Yeah. What about if it was live workshops and he was able to get in front of them? What kind of presentation could he do along the same lines?
Yeah, if he was going to do a workshop, that's the workshop I create. I create a workshop of free reports.
Okay, so educating these physicians on upcoming topics.
Well, educating their not only the physicians but the patients.
Okay.
So free reports for the consumer.
I see. So he's going to create free reports that the physicians can use and distribute to the consumers to build better community relations.
Right.
Okay, I like that.
Yeah.
This is from John Strange, one of our longtime consultants out of Dallas, and he asks, Richard, how do you fill a workshop? Should you charge for a workshop?
John, I've done both. I've had workshops that are free. I've had workshops that we charge. Both work. So you'll just need to test and try them both. The best way to fill a workshop is to work with an endorsement group, so a chamber of commerce, a small business development center, a education group that works with small businesses. Those are all affiliates of yours that you can form a relationship with, but that's the best way to fill it, is the groups that are already doing workshops. Go to that group and offer your marketing expertise.
Okay, question from James Dutton. Richard, who is the best target market for our system in today's economy? It seems many small business owners are afraid to invest in their business right now. Who has the money to invest?
That is a good question, and it's probably correct. In this economic situation, we're seeing the smaller businesses kind of hold off and bury themselves a little bit till things turn around. I'm noticing in my consulting it's gravitating to the 8 to 10 million and above businesses. Those guys are still healthy. Those guys are still strong. Those guys are a group of them, not all of them, but a group of them want to capture market share right now. They understand that if they'll do marketing, this thing is going to turn around and they'll be in a great position. So you might start looking at a little bit larger businesses in the 8 to 10 and above million.
Okay. James has an additional question, and he asks, what are the quickest ways to show a new client some profit while doing the USP phase so the client can justify making the investment on our fees in today's economy?
Just had a live case situation occur. I have a manufacturing group that contracts with me. One of their agents called me up and said, we're in a turnaround, Richard. We got a situation here where we got to find some fast cash. And he said the same thing. He says, I'm a little worried that we might take too long on the USP to get to some fast cash. And I said, well, we'll do them simultaneously. The business has been in long enough that we can get a USP going, and we can do that pretty quickly. And to all the consultants, if you got to do a USP in a week, you can get it done. Okay? Don't let the system and the steps of the system dictate how fast you work it. And so we established three fast cash projects. One would be fixing their current sales process and probably getting rid of a salesman that's underperforming. The second was getting the USP integrated into the selling process. And that's steps one and two that we're going to do kind of simultaneously. And then they've got a good database. So we're going to immediately go back to about 1,000 customers to generate some fast cash. So those first three steps are very fast and they can be done very quickly.
Okay, so with those first three steps and with this specific example you're talking about, how did you handle, what did you sell them on, all four projects at once, and did they pay all?
We sold them on all four projects, and we're going to get it done in 2 months.
Okay, so they paid up front for all of them?
They're paying half 1 month, half the next.
For all four projects? Uh-huh. What are you getting on each one of those projects?
It's a $10,000 contract.
For all four?
Uh-huh.
Okay, great.
That's 2 months, so we'll be fast. It'll be quick.
Okay, very good. Here's a question from Lowell Stern, and he asks, Richard, what's the best way to handle professional clients like financial planners, physicians, attorneys, etc., who face regulatory obstacles to many marketing approaches in contingency deals?
Yes, I've worked with those same professionals that face those requirements, and the best way is education and endorsements. Some of them allow endorsements, others don't, so you have to look at what that does. But I've set financial planners up with workshops and newsletters, easing letters and things that they can use, because they will allow as much education as they want. And so I would go that direction with all of those.
Okay. Question from HMA consultant Mark Whately. Mark asks, Richard, can you go through a couple ways to use the system to create a back end beyond selling the four modules to a client?
Yes, those are things we're exploring all the time, and I'm working with Michael on some of those ideas. But a couple of things that you can do is work out a contingency with the client after the four steps are done. I've done that before to create longer-term residual income where we've established the four steps, we like each other, we have a good relationship, so let's continue maybe some new steps or variations of the four steps on a commission-only basis. So that's one way to create back-end revenue. The other way that I've done in my own industry, but others have done in other industries, is once you get really good at, say, the heating and air conditioning industry, you can take what you did there and were productive and license the ideas to the heating and air conditioning industry. So you could create some back-end revenue there through some licensing. You could also, of course, sell the seven steps to a lot more sales as a back-end opportunity for clients that maybe can't afford all of your steps or a few of your steps. So those are a few ideas for some back-end revenue.
Here's a question from Paulus Yunus, and he's our new consultant in Indonesia. He says, Richard, my question is about the HMA system. You have several steps to do each before we can achieve growth. As a small business consultant, you know that most small business owners have lack of management expertise in almost all aspects of their running their business, not to mention human resources and capabilities, etc. This will pose a problem to develop USP for their competitive advantage if they don't have a good and skilled support divisions to make it happen. Say we would like to create USPs of three-day job order done, but they don't have productive production divisions in transportation delivery to customers on time.
We kind of addressed the first part of your question in that the first three, four steps are very much growth oriented. So they you don't have to do all four of those before you get growth. Your bigger question then later is that if you can't deliver a USP to a client that can't fulfill it. So in your USP project, part of it needs to be asking the question, can these guys operationally execute? And if they can't, you have to either create a USP that they can, which has happened to me several times. I might recommend a very strong and bold USP, and the client says, well, we're not quite ready for that part of it, but we could do this part of it. And so you'll back off some of the boldness and maybe start with a little less bold USP. So the more important answer is make sure you match up the USP with what they can deliver right now. At the same time, we like USPs to help a company fix their operational deficiencies. And so a good USP can sometimes force them to raise the bar of performance in their company. And if you've got to give it a little time to do that, then you'll need to do that.
Great. Here's a question from Michael Whitehead. Richard, my local business alliance has asked me to partner with them and offer special pricing for my consulting and internet marketing services for member businesses. How would you make the most of this kind of opportunity?
I think the best way is to ask for a few clients at full price to test and just say, listen, we're kind of new together as an alliance. Let me work with one or two or three, and if it really goes well, maybe we can partner in a more aggressive way. What I've learned from groups and associations who say, yeah, let's make a deal, Richard, most of them don't come through on their end. Most of them don't do the marketing that you expected for your discounted rate. And so that's why you want to be careful not to just say, oh, yeah, I'll discount right away. You need to find out how aggressive they're going to be in marketing. You need to find out how much they're going to promote you. Maybe you can establish that up front. Say, yes, I'll discount if we have a workshop every month. Or I'll discount if we have a workshop every week. Or I'll discount if you'll send out a letter for a free consultation every month. So if they'll do the promotion that you need to get the number of clients, great. Most don't, unless you maybe set that up front. So you might just say, let's test things for a little bit.
Dave Hughes asks, what is the best way to handle a gatekeeper when cold calling businesses?
In my experience, I start asking for the person in charge of business development, and I go ahead and make it a two-step or three-step call, David. It's just hard to fight through that gatekeeper. So accept it, and just make it a two or three step call, in that you may need to call back and get around that person by talking to the business developer, instead of the business owner.
Question from Nick Hetcher. Hi, Richard. I'm a brand new, in fact, I just opened my HMA box today. I am excited. However, my law professor brother says I need a college degree to even think about making money in the business. Frankly, I think he's completely off base. Please tell me why he's wrong and how I can best begin to turn a profit within the next 15 to 30 days. Is that possible? Nick Hetcher, Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Sure, it's possible. He's wrong. What you need to do, Nick, is ask yourself what credentials you have. If you've performed, if you've been successful in previous ventures, that's a marketing success, and you can point to that. But one of the biggest reasons you invested in HMA, and the advantage is that the performance has already been done. So the college degree has been inserted into the HMA course. The MBA has been inserted into the HMA course. The course that you're getting is 10 times the equivalent and better of any college education. So rely on the credibility of 20 years in the field with the HMA system as your education. You could also let your professor brother understand that Dell and IBM are using this training as their preferred choice for marketing education in their online learning courses, and see what he might say about that.
All right, well stated. Here's another question from Richard Bernstein. Richard, there are many interviews in the university section with different approaches to telemarketing for appointments. Some say have a script that offers a pitch. Others think the best way is to ask for a survey, and so it goes. What do you find is the most effective in this world of high-speed everything? I'm in New York, and people will not engage unless there's a powerful reason.
Well, the first recommendation, Richard, is to just not do that. Just not go that way. Cold calling is hard. Cold calling is difficult, and in New York it's going to be very, very difficult. So our recommendation in the course and in the training is that you try to hook up with a third-party endorsement group, that you try to alliance yourself with someone that can introduce you to small businesses. So go to your CPA or go to your tax accountant or go to your local chamber group or go to a networking group that meets every week with lunch. There's a lot of those out there. If you have to go cold calling, it's just going to be a matter of testing, and Michael and I are continually looking and watching out for groups that might be able to do that in a very efficient way. But so far, it's just a big test out there. We're still looking and still testing, and so if you can avoid it, I'd do that first. You know, early on when I didn't have a lot of relationships, but this was 15, 20 years ago where cold calling was a little bit more successful. So I did some cold calling, but as fast as I was able to align myself with a manufacturing third-party group, with chambers and with small business development centers who loved me to come and speak to their small businesses, all of a sudden there's no need for any of that cold calling.
Okay, great. Here's a question from Clayton Bretti. Michael and Richard, you have such a great value in the HMA system and bonuses that were provided. I have never seen a better training value for the dollar. Thank you for making it available at that price. Has there ever been an issue with a business owner buying the HMA system and implementing it in his own business rather than paying a consultant for his services?
As we understand, there's going to be some business owners that can't or won't ever pay you to consult with them. So the 7-step systems is available in manuals and DVDs and on the web for those clients that want to implement by themselves. Now, what my recommendation is if you sell them those as a starting point, or you sell them a free, you give them a free report that you create or something, stay with them, because they're not going to vary, usually they're not going to be successful at executing. So they still may turn to you for your help.
The Articulate HMA Online presentation, and Richard, that's the role-playing presentation we did with all the slides. We state how to uncover $10,000 to $1 million or more in newfound sales from your business in the next 60 to 90 days. That is quite a claim. How consistently can that actually be done, especially given the time period? Doesn't business size and structure make a difference in whether that can be met? If your USP isn't even fully integrated until after the second step in 60 days, how can it produce that level of sales increase almost immediately? How do you qualify this statement with the business owner when he asks you about it?
The first thing is does the business owner ask about it? And usually they don't. Usually it's an attention grabber. It's a headline for a workshop. It's a headline for a letter. And you'll notice it's how you can uncover. Doesn't say how you will. So you're not making any promises here. $10,000 isn't a whole lot of money. So can that be done in 60 to 90 days? You bet. Yeah, that's pretty consistent. As far as most of the work I've done. However, usually the business owner has his own goals. He has his own objectives. He has his own needs. He has his own wants. More importantly is to find that out and take care of that. If you have to manipulate the steps so that you might say, well, he's already got a USP, so let me immediately today do a mailing to his database, we'll do it. If that could create $10,000 to $1 million right there. You could manipulate the steps so that right today you could get that USP that you think he already has but he hasn't been selling. If you can get that into the selling process, that'll raise $10,000 to $1 million right away. So, yep, it's a legitimate statement. Yep, it's worked. But you're right. It kind of depends on the business size and the number of assets that they've got. If they've got a lot of customers they've never talked to, better chance you're going to make that thing happen. If they've got some good relationships that they've never tapped into and alliances, pretty quick you could get and make that happen. If those assets aren't there, you're right, it's going to be tougher to make that happen. But each client just needs to be treated individually.
I'm a new consultant working my way through the 2005 DVDs. From what I've heard so far, there's a wide range of fees that can be charged, and everything is negotiable. Do you have any rule of thumb for how to determine what fees to charge? I understand that larger amounts are often charged by business size, complexity, and location. But are there any other tips that you could give a little more clarity on? Any rule of thumb for pricing the various individual steps? What allowances, if any, should be given for the level of experience in the consulting business? For example, one of my first paying clients could very well be a sole proprietor farm chemical business doing $20 million in sales per year. How might I charge for the various steps?
Well, that's a great question, and it's been a question and answer for 20 years. And I guess probably some guidelines that have kind of evolved over the years is we would anticipate for most of consultants that they can deliver a step in about 15 to 20 hours. So if you go $100 an hour, which should be the minimum every one of you would charge, then a minimum should be $1,500 for a project. Just don't ever charge anything less than that. Now, above that would depend somewhat on the size of the business, the number of assets you see, and how quickly you might be able to see a good return in the marketing steps. Then you should be charging $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 a step. We have HMA consultants that have charged $10,000 a step. So it's going to be the demand and need that your client has and your time availability that will kind of dictate the pricing. Let me just explain that your fees are almost totally related to the demand you create for yourself. So if you're doing a lot of marketing, which we want you to do, the demand for your work will go up. As the demand for your work goes up, your price can go up. If you have no demand, your price is going to be always low. So try to do the best you can to create as much demand for your expertise.
Here's a question from Steve Stewart. Richard, if you were just starting out with no money and no experience as a consultant, what one or two methods would you use to get your first client?
If I didn't have to get paid right away, I would work with a friend, or I'd work with a neighbor. I'd find an associate that I've done business with, maybe, or been a customer of. And I'd go to them and I'd say, could we try some ideas? And if they work, will you give me a good testimonial? So that would be the first place. The second place would be to go to an alliance group, a professional that works with small businesses, your accountant, your printer, your CPA, or maybe the local chamber group. These are the best places to go because they're starving for content. They're starving for things they can deliver their small businesses. So those are the one or two methods I would get going on first.
How is your team set up now, Richard? Do you have a secretary, a project manager, junior consultants, outsourcing providers, etc.?
Boy, I've been tempted to go with all of those, but everything I've needed, I've just outsourced. So if I've needed administrative help, I've outsourced it. If I've needed printing help, I've outsourced it. If I've needed other consultant help, I've outsourced it. So far in my career, I've been able to outsource everything. My preference has been to remain a one-man show. This is the way I like to work the best. I like to work from my home. I like to not entangle myself in too many relationships, and so one thing that you purchased and you invested in was all parts of the business can be operated by you. So I invoice clients, I get paid, I collect, I service, I market, but when I've needed the help, I've usually gone out to the experts to get it.
All right, here's a question. These next series of questions are from Mr. C, and he asks, Richard, can you please provide a current case study of a consultant who is leveraging the system in a different way successfully so it's not just the under-leveraged HMA consultant as a one-man band? What model is this top HMA consultant income earner utilizing?
Probably the latest example would be I do have a couple of consultants that have taken it and gone into the internet marketing consulting and built businesses around that. When the internet came on board, that was a huge attraction to some consultants, and they've gone that direction. So, yeah, they have a business that's operating more as a conventional business with staff and with programmers and designers and things like that because they entered that area of the website.
In a previous call, you said some competitors and HMA consultants had not been successful combining consulting with added fulfillment services. Could you go into detail why this was?
Yes. Many of you may have inquired and remembered a company called Y2K Marketing. Both of those principals were trained by myself, and they are now out of business. I think they're in lawsuits against each other. And I always got their mailings. I got their promotional materials. And I do believe that what happened is they tried to become a fulfillment house. And that is, rather than the consultants just delivering a system of marketing, they wanted their consultants to also deliver to them all of the advertising business, all of the big four business fulfillment areas. Well, when the consultant took his eye off of the client and marketing for new clients and put it on fulfillment, they lost their income. And so it's because so much time can get eaten up in fulfillment. And I'll tell you, I just brought on two new clients in Rapid City and in Fargo, North Dakota, and they were already working with ad agencies and fulfillment houses, and they appreciated so much that I didn't get in the way, that I was willing and able to go work with them, because I'm not going to get paid otherwise in trying to compete with them. And so the continuity's maintained, their relationships are maintained. If I was all of a sudden in the fulfillment business, I'd be trying to say to my client, okay, now I need you to give me all your direct mail business, or I need you to give me all your printing business. And I'd be suddenly taking away the relationship he's built up over 20 years in Rapid City. So those are the issues that get in the way there.
Richard, this question relates to step three of the HMA system, databases. You are out in the field daily now, talking to business owners, so could you tell me the general feeling or status related to the usage of effectiveness of CRM solutions like Salesforce.com, SalesLogic, Infusion Software, etc.? I'm wondering if I could maybe leverage myself by also doing implementation work in this area as a value add, or whether it's a good place or not to leverage myself.
My initial recommendation is to not try to go there. Again, you're entering into the area of fulfillment. And in this case, instead of media, it's databases. Well, companies can hire and buy database execution very, very cheaply. So I just wouldn't go there. I would stay away and keep it strategic in how you're going to use the database. Let them, most of them already have some kind of database system in place. Don't interfere with that. Unless you are so trained that way, then I'd make a deal with other consultants and I'd become a database manager and turn your business into a huge database management where you're managing that, but you'd have to have, you know, thousands, maybe millions of entries to make it worthwhile.
Richard, you appear to be an avid reader. Could you please tell me what books you've read in the past couple years that would help as an HMA consultant? Please don't repeat the books you recommended in the 2005-2006 trainings DVDs, as I've already written down those titles. Anything recent?
Janet Switzer has a great book. She's a New York Times bestselling co-author of The Success Principles. It's called Instant Income. I like Janet. Very, very good, and almost everything in that book supports and backs up the system. Dan Kennedy's No BS Direct Marketing is good. I've read a fun one recently, that The Obvious Expert. It's not a fun one, but that's a good one from Elsom Eldridge. Conrad has a new one out, Guerrilla Advertising. An old one, Bill Good's Prospecting Your Way to Sales Success, is very good. Spencer Johnson's got a good one out, Peaks and Valleys. I've used that in my workshop in explaining what companies should do at the valley time and at the peak times, and that's been great. So there's a few more for you.
Okay. Richard, can you give me a new updated case study where steps one and two of the system generated easy, tangible business for the customer? How are you able to set up tracking on steps one and two so the business owner knows it was due to the USP in its implementation?
Yeah, we had a boat company that makes boat covers, and steps one and two, in doing step two, integrating the USP, they brought on probably 50% more dealers than they had ever brought on before to carry their boat covers. And so one and two can be very powerful. The tracking, what you want to do is early in the USP is begin to get the three numbers, how many prospects are being generated and contacted, in the current marketing? What's the current conversion rate? And what's the current average sale per customer? Those are three figures that you want to get out early on the table, because those are the figures that your business owner wants to see go up. And so that's how I've always implemented the tracking of steps one and two.
So what with this boat cover, what did they have a USP? And then if not, what was the USP that caused that?
The USP was a delivery guarantee on the covers. And that attracted the dealers, and that's what brought in about 250 more dealers than they'd ever brought in. So we did a direct mail piece that went out to dealer prospects, and it was the combination of that USP and that direct mail piece that in 60 days they had their new dealers.
Okay, great. Richard, what do you think of charging to do an opportunity analysis? Some competitors I've run across do three-hour-long marketing audits, which they charge for and then use as a sales tool to get the business owner on as a client. I looked at these audits, and they just looked like the opportunity analysis done in a little more depth.
I think it's a great opportunity for revenue. I think I've, of course, used the opportunity analysis complimentary as a way to secure the client as a paying client. I've not ever really tried to charge for that, but it's certainly a value, and you could charge $299 or $499 or $999 to really do a good opportunity analysis, and I think it'd be of great value to the client.
Okay, Richard, on average, what percent of your clients are doing all four steps of the core four? What percentage of your income comes from the core four versus step five, six, seven, and eight? Is doing group training now a meaningful amount of your income?
95% of all my clients do all four. I don't sell except all four. Okay, so I never sell one step at a time. It's a proposal that's all four of them. So 95% of my income comes from those four. I have probably, because my expertise and my fun was mostly in the core four. That's what I developed from my Abraham training. The big four I've not pursued as much, because we get into fulfillment issues that we discussed earlier. We get into longer time frames, longer relationships, and it just hasn't been my nature to go there. So our goal in creating the HMA system was that you all could make a lot of money on the core four. If some of you had interest in pursuing ad work or PR work or internet work or direct marketing, great, you could pursue that, and you could stay with clients longer, you could have longer relationships with them. So the system is such that you can.
This is the end of part one. Please continue to part two.